personal moment because yesterday I had the 100% zechut. There's no other way to say it of being present for the opening of Camp Stone's 50th season. Very exciting time, and our family is absolutely sold on Camp Stone. All of our kids have gone there, and some of them, two of them, are there right now. So I every year I chaperone the flight, and I go up for the opening tochnit. But for me personally, the big excitement is before the buses arrive. The buses come, and they wait out on the road, and the directors of the camp meet with the entire faculty, the entire staff of the camp, which is a large staff. And the kumzitz slash pep talk that takes place before the camp season starts is, if you ever wonder, if you ever worry about the future of Am Yisrael, go and sit there and listen and watch these young people singing and listening with rapt attention as they get their charge for what they're going to do over the next 28 days. And you're filled with confidence and hope and really inspiration. So in little moments when I was able to, I went up to both directors, the husband and wife, before I had to leave, not long after that, and just said thank you and took off. But it was just really remarkable. And it's a camp that has, for at least for the past 20 plus years, had as its quite non-secretive agenda that it's a camp where everybody who's there is there to grow. And it's not like the quote-unquote adults who are all 18 and older are there to give something, and the campers that are grow, everybody's there to grow. And the spiritual and emotional and educational growth that the counselors, the staff goes through there is just really remarkable. Stone of B'nai Akiva camp, centered out of Cleveland, but attracting kids from 35 cities around the world. And it's really, really remarkable. Anyhow, so just wanted to share a little shout out to Yaakov and Esti and wish them Hatzlacha in this 50th year of Camp Stone. In the middle of this week's parasha, at least the parasha we're reading here in Chutz La'aretz, which is Behalotecha, there is a curious conversation that takes place between Moshe and who we think is his father-in-law, and Chotein Moshe. And this conversation takes place at the end of Sefer Bamidbar Part 1, and I'll explain what that means. The Midrash, in one particular place, talks about a pasuk in Mishlei, Chatzva Amudeha Shiva. She has formed for herself, etched out for herself, seven pillars. And we have a Midrash. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, what are these seven pillars? These are the seven books of the Torah. The seven books of the Torah, you kind of say, the word I missed two. And the idea is that Bereishit is a book, Shemot is a book, Vayikra is a book, Dvarim is a book, and Bamidbar is three different books. Because there's Bamidbar, which is up until the upside down Nun. Then there's Bamidbar after the upside down Nun, and then there's the two psukim inside the upside down Nuns. But on a literary level, when you read it, you realize there really are different books. The first 10 chapters of Bamidbar are a straight continuation of Shemot, B'chol Maaseihem. It's all about organizing the camp and getting ready to move, and it's tremendous excitement and great optimism. And the Rav's very famous shiur that he gave on Parshat Balotcha, the shiur he gave in honor of Rabbi Klavan back in 77, he talked about how Moshe in this conversation is brimming with such confidence to share God's goodness with all of the world. His invitation to Chovav is an invitation to all converts and to the whole world. And the minute that you get into the sixth aliyah, the transition happens in Balotcha. People start kvetching and complaining, and one thing leads to the next, and then the next thing you know, Miriam and Aaron are complaining, and the next thing you know, we got 10 guys coming back and telling stories about Eretz Yisrael, and everybody's complaining, and then there's rebellions, and whether these things actually happen in that order, which we've dealt with in the past, that's the way Bamidbar is structured. That after chapter 10, it's a spiral that goes down, 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 and then keeps getting balanced with mitzvot in every story. But it's really a spiral that goes down, and perhaps the end of the spiral is even when two of the tribes say, we don't want to cross the Jordan, which happens towards the end of the book. And then Vayhi ben Saharon, those two psukim seem to be sort of the buffer between the two. And indeed, that's the way that some of the Chachamim read. Why are the nuns there? As if to say, it doesn't really belong there. It's put as a buffer between one bad story and another bad story, or etc. So this invitation that Moshe issues, that we're going to read in a minute, a very short invitation, is almost at the crescendo of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We've left Mitzrayim, we've come to Har Sinai, we've accepted the Torah, we've built the Mishkan, we've gotten the mitzvot for the Mishkan, we've counted the people, we've set them up as an army camp, we've got the trumpets ready to go, we've got the order in which we're going to go, every group of Levim knows where they're going to camp and what they're going to carry, and it's like trumpets blaring, it's a Susa festival. And then Moshe edges this invitation, and right after this is where things fall. So I'm going to read the end of the great part. We're traveling to the place that God said He's going to give us. Come with us, and we will do good with you. God has spoken well on behalf of Am Yisrael, meaning God has promised to give good things to us, and we want you to be included in that. At this point, it sounds like a very generous offer on Moshe's part. And now we'll find that the generosity is driven by a particular need. So Chovav answers, I'm not going to go with you, I'm going back to my people, to Molati. And now Moshe says, please don't abandon us. Right? You know where we camp in the desert. You'll be our eyes in the desert. So we find out that Moshe's very beneficent offer is driven by a need, which is we need someone to help us scout through the desert, which itself is a little strange considering we've got that whole cloud thing working. But that's the way that Moshe pitches it. And now the beneficence is now brought as a bonus, the signing bonus. It's, if you come with us and be our eyes, then all of that greatness that God has promised to us will give to you also. But that's a far cry from, we want to share it with you. It's turned into a plea, and somewhat of a desperate plea. We're going out of the desert, we don't know our way, you know your way through the desert, you'll help us out, and by the way, we'll share all the good stuff with you. All right. So it's a little bit of a shift in tone.
But he does say it in the Pasuk, start to read there's right?
Right.
He always tells him.
We'll share it with you. Right. But in the second part of the conversation, it's the bonus, which is really sort of the come on for if you do this favor and come be our eyes. In the opening, it's an invitation. Come join us. We got great stuff to share. So it shifted a little bit when Chovav, perhaps to Moshe's surprise, said no. He said, wait a second, we need you.
Well, actually, the shift is as sharing, from sharing, moving to compensation for something
right.
That you're providing.
Right.
The service you're providing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well put. So instead of it being, I'm offering you something as a gift because of outpouring of chesed, it's like we need you for something, and that same thing now is shifted into... It's less altruistic. Exactly. So I want to ask a very simple question here, which is, as always, it's an onion. You know, take a simple question, but you peel away, there's more stuff here. Who's Moshe talking to?
Sounds like his brother-in-law.
What?
Could be his brother-in-law.
Could be his brother-in-law. Because Chovav ben Reuel. All right? We're going to see about that, because as far as we all grew up with, every one of us was... raised on with mother's milk, with the midrash that we have on the backside in several versions. We know it from Rashi. It's in source 18, and it's source 19, and it's source 20, and it's source 21, and it's all anchored in the Sifri in source 22, which is that Chovav and Yitro are the same person, right? And Chovav and Reuel are the same person, and that Yitro has seven different names. And the Sifri goes through the details of why each name is a meaningful name, and each one is associated with either a character trait or something he did. Yater, Shehir, Dotir, Parsha, Chat, Batorah, Chovav, Shechivev, right, etc. So the simple way that we look at it is But of course, like Abe points out right away, that's very difficult to say because who is he called here? Chovav ben Reuel. Now, Chovav ben Reuel would mean, based on that midrash, that his own father, his own son, right, which doesn't really work very well. So, who is he talking to? But I'll ask a different question. Is, if this is Moshe's brother-in-law, then does he say yes or does he not say yes? And wasn't this offer already refused? Or shall we say, wasn't the opportunity for this offer already presented and then sent away? So let's look a little bit more into who this might be. When we first meet the family, that is Tzipora's family, Moshe has run away from Egypt. He's killed the Egyptian taskmaster. He's run away either directly or circuitous route for many years. He ends up in Midian. He ends up at a well in Midian. And we then hear, Ulechohen Midian Sheva Banot. There's some guy called Kohen Midian. And he's got seven daughters. And it sounds like he's got seven daughters and no sons, or at least no older sons, because the daughters are out with the flock, and they get hassled by other shepherds. And you would think that, given that circumstance, if there were boys in the family, they'd be out there with them. We find a similar phenomenon with Lavan, where Lavan evidently only has two daughters, and then only later on has sons, which creates the problems with Yaakov. Now, they come and they fill up the water. The other shepherds come and chase them away. And this, of course, is part of the Moshe story of standing up for the Hebrew against the Egyptian, and then chastising the two Hebrews that are fighting, and then standing up on behalf of an absolute stranger who is the unarmed or more vulnerable person, in this case the girls, and he saves them. He gives the water. Who do they come to? They come to Reuel, their father. The simplest read of it is there's a bunch of girls, and their father, who is Kohen Midian, is named Reuel. That's a nice name.
Not Yitro.
It's called Reuel. And by the way, we have it, Sam, so ingrained that we read Reuel, but in our head we hear Yitro. Right? He said, how do you get home so quickly? Because normally you have to wait till all the shepherds do their thing and allow you and hear you, you're home early. So they tell the story. Some Egyptian guy came and saved us. Where is he? Why did you abandon him? Some hospitality. After all, we're Bedouins. Bring him in. He should eat with us. And Moshe agrees to stay with the man, because after all, he's wandering here. And the later result of that, we don't know that it's immediate. Oh, you save the girls, you can have one of them for... It's not so clear that that happens. But Moshe then marries Tzipora, one of the daughters. That means that Moshe's father-in-law is, we know a name, Reuel, and we know a position, Kohen Midian. We don't know anything else. We do know that that he had a flock and that he had his daughters shepherding the flock for him. Okay. Moshe then goes, if you take a look at source 5, Moshe then goes after being around, has that famous scene where he's inaugurated into Nevuah at the Sneh. How does that scene start? The scene starts that he's shepherding the flock
of Yitro.
Which is immediately confusing because we thought it was Reuel's flock. But it's confusing only because we've assumed something about chronology which is not at all necessary. Which is that Moshe wandered around and arrived at Yitro's, Reuel's house, close to the scene with the snap, and that these things all take place pretty much at the same time, one after the other. So therefore he marries Tzipporah, and then has the baby, and then not long after that, he's shepherding the flock of that same father-in-law, and ends up having the vision. And as if to really seal the deal, Yitro is called two things here, which immediately make us think that must be the same guy we read about in the previous parak, which is Chotno, which we assume means father-in-law, and Kohen Midian. And Kohen Midian tells you that there is only one. Going down is a single position.
Chief rabbi.
Right? Right, exactly. Well, that is true, right? He's the Ashkenazi Kohen Minyan.
Can Kohen also be a different kind of in-law?
Yeah, it can. It can. And that's going to be the solution. But we're going to, and Avram already mentioned that here, so I'll cut to the chase right away. The Ben Ezra helps us out, and it's in the comment number 2, kind of buried under one. I was hoping you wouldn't see it, but the Ben Ezra in Bamidbar, in our Parsha, identifies Choten as being a male relative by marriage. So it can be a father-in-law, it can be a brother-in-law. For our purposes, those are the two options we want to play with. Okay, so keeping that in mind, now let's see what happens. Yitro is not Reuel. What? And not Chovav. Now, I want to start it by addressing that particular issue. The Midrash is what the Midrash is, and we'll talk about why the Midrash is. But in Pshat, and if you turn the page, I brought you a bunch of examples of cases where the Torah, Tanakh, identifies for us a person who has two names. As simple as the Pasuk in Divrei Amim, Avram hu Avraham, very simply, and the last one of these examples, which is very well known from Esther, Hadassah, he Esther, tells us here's a person with two different names. Avram's name turns into Avraham, gets changed by God. Hadassah and Esther seem to be her private Jewish name and her public Persian name, but two names. But we've got lots of examples. Esav, we're told, is also called Edom. We're told that God changes Yaakov's name to Yisrael. We're told that Paro changes Yosef's name to Safnat Paneach, an Egyptian name. We're told that Moshe changes Hoshea's name to Yoshua. We're told that that Gidon gets called Yerubal because of the way his father saved his life, saying, if Baal's angry at him, let Baal kill him. Yerubal, which is turned around. He's the battler against the Baal. And we're told, for instance, that when Shlomo was born, right? Shlomo was born, and David calls him Shlomo, and Natan HaNavi comes and calls him Yedidya, God's friend, as a prophetic name. And so Shlomo, who is Yedidya? Okay, so we have lots of examples of Tanakh when an individual has two different names. And then we have all sorts of Midrashim, which take two different people and cross-identify them. For instance, Hagar. So Hagar, we know Hagar from Bereshit, and Hagar is sent out to the desert with Ishmael, or perhaps Ishmael's son, we talked about that, but Hagar is sent out with evidently Ishmael, never to be heard from again.
Doesn't she remarry?
And then at a later point, Sarah has died, and after when Yitzchak is evidently hanging out in Be'er Lachayroi, because that's where he's coming from when he sees the camels with Rivka, it says, Vayosef Avraham, famous trivia question, where do you see a man and his great-grandson next to each other in Tanakh? Vayosef Avraham, right? That Avraham then, Vayikach Isha Ushma Keturah, he takes a woman, her name is Keturah, and she has like 6 kids with him. Bunch of kids and grandchildren, big mishpucha. That's Midian comes from. Right, so the Midrash says Keturah is Hagar. It's like Machloka in the Midrash. But Rebbe says Keturah is Hagar. And where do we get that from? Because Yitzchak was a Paralachairoi, and he says, I'm married. It's not nice. Father shouldn't be married. And he brings Hagar back, who's been hanging out there davening for the last 60 years in Paralachairoi. I'm just putting a slight edge on it. Because the problem, of course, is a pragmatic one. If Hagar birthed Ishmael, and let's call her 12 at the time, to be the most conservative possible. She gave birth to Ishmael when Avraham was 86. Avraham now is 137 plus. Sarah died. Which means that Hagar is already in her 60s at the very least, probably in her 70s or 80s. So for her to come back and suddenly be burying him lots of kids is very strange. But the stranger part is, why didn't just say Hagar? The text knows how to tell us, and the text knows her name. Why call her a different name? Or why not just say, Vayikach Isha Ushma Keturah Hi Hagar? And then we know. The simple pshat is that Keturah and Hagar are not the same person. Why do Chazal want to tie them together? That's a midrashic development that has its own wisdom to it. We have the same thing in Megillat Esther. And this is now not our phenomenon. There's a phenomenon when there are two disparate people by name, and Chazal cross-identified. And so at the very beginning of Megillat Esther, we're told about Ahasuerus' advisors. And the second round of advisors that he calls to see, what should I do about Vashti, advisor number 7 is called Mimuchan. And Mimuchan is the one who then comes up with the advice of said that we have to de-Vashtiize her. She has hurt your reputation among the people, among the ministers, etc. Okay. What do Chazal famously say about Mimuchan? Mimuchan is a Haman. Now, why would the text not just put Haman there in the story? Why call him something else? Why bury it? And the simple reading, of course, is that he's not the same person. That there's Mimuchan and there's Haman. So what do Chazal mean by this Midrash? And this is, by the way, the general rule. Whenever they cross-identify two people, say this person's the same as that person, so they want to say whatever you can learn about one, you can apply to the other.
Same traits.
Same traits. Same schemes. Same abilities, perhaps. So, for instance, when you see Haman, who's got Ahasuerus wrapped around his finger at the beginning of the story, and you wonder why, look at Mimuchan. Mimuchan is somebody who knows how to play the king. Read the story carefully. He plays on the king's psychological weaknesses and vulnerability. And so it's the same thing. That's when we have two named people and we're told they're really the same person. Right? Through Yiskazu Sarai, that may be closer to Pshat, Mimuchan Zahaman, etc. We have numerous cases like that. And the most extravagant example of that is when in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Chazal say, Daryavesh, Artachshasta, Vikoresh are all the same person. Three different kings in the Persian Empire, all the same person. And that his real name is this one, and he's called this because he's Melech Kasher, and he's called this one because of some other reason. Say, no, his real name is actually C, and A and B are both Midrash, but Midrash Shem. But in other words, that all three of these very disparate characters that we know from the Persian archives and we know from Tanakh are all the same person. Chazal clearly don't mean that. And the Baal Hamor says on the spot, they don't mean it's the same person. What they mean is similar traits, even though they seem to act differently, there's really a common thing binding them together. But that's a different phenomenon. That's when we have named people who are disparate people, and the Midrash draws them together. Here we have something that's akin to that, but it's a little bit more difficult to tear apart because the evidence seems to point to this being the same person, especially with the keyword choten that ties them together, and Kohen Midyan. So let's go back to the story and see if we can figure out what happened. One other thing to note is that Chovav, in our parsha, Moshe comes up to Chovav and says, please come with us. And what's the end of the story? He says, please come. Chovav says, no. Moshe says, please, we need you, and we'll share it with you. And we don't hear what happens. And so our assumption is that he doesn't go. And the reason we assume he doesn't go is because if Chovav is the same as Yitro, then look at the bottom of source 7, the whole chapter of the beginning of Yitro ends with Yitro goes back to his country. But if Yitro is Chovav, then how come Moshe sends him back from Har Sinai to his people, and yet somehow Yitro shows up again with the Chovav mask on, when they're about to leave, and then Moshe begs him to go. Very strange. And in matter of fact, we know that Chovav, or in some form or another, went. How do we know that? Because this is a loaded question, but who is the most physically impressive heroine in Tanakh? I'm not talking about wile, like Esther perhaps, but the person who does the most physically significant act in Tanakh to save the Jewish people. It's Yael, right? And Yael herself is not Jewish. Who is Yael? She's married to Chever Hakeni. Who is that? So take a look at source 4 from this story. The Chever Hakeni Nifrad Mikayin. There's a guy named Chever who's from the Keni people, and he broke away. Young Israel, North Keni. He broke away. Mibnei Chovav Choten Moshe. Who are the Keni? The descendants of Chovav, Choten Moshe, which means they came to Israel. No, it happened at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. They joined Shevet Yehuda and Shimon in fighting and getting land. They get land, and they give them land in the North Sinai. And when Shaul comes to go to war against Amalek, who's living right near Amalek? The Keni, And Shaul says, I don't want you guys to be collateral damage. They haven't even invented the term yet. So bug out before we go to war against Amalek. And they move. The Keni are friendly with us. They're our friendly neighbors who are Bedouins. And a group of them goes north. And Yael is married to one of them. And she kills Sisera. And a very famous story. So Chovav did come with us. So how could Yitro go back? How many guys are there in the family? So I'd like to just point to one other oddity in the beginning of the spiral. Remember I mentioned that Sefer Bamidbar, part 3, which starts at the beginning of chapter 11, in our Parsha, is this spiral down, which starts with kvetching and more kvetching, and then ultimately spirals down to the what we call the Chet HaMeraglim, and it goes from there. The kvetching starts about food, but the second set of kvetching, there's two food kvetches, the second set of kvetching is Miriam and Aaron. What's Miriam so upset about? So the simple pshat is that Miriam and Aharon are upset. Miriam chiefly is upset that Moshe is treating himself as if his prophecy is superior. And the proof of that is that what God answers is, it is superior. And as if to symbolize it, Hashem summons Miriam, Aharon, and Moshe into the Mishkan. And then he summons the two of them out and puts the cloud down. So to make it clear, Moshe is on the inside, you're on the outside.
Wasn't, I always thought her argument was that the leader of the people should serve as an example. He separated himself from his wife.
So we, see, that's the thing. We don't know about him separating himself from his wife.
No.
That's the Midrash, one Midrash, in which Zipporah is overheard saying when she has Eldad Umedad, having this prophecy, oh, yeah, I feel terrible for their wives. Miriam and Aaron say, what's the problem? So ever since Moshe got Nevoah, he won't sleep with me. And he said, what are you talking about? We're married. We have normal family lives.
Yes,
right. But that's not pshat in the psukim. The simple pshat is that Miriam and Aharon are saying, we're also Nevi'im. Why is Moshe holding himself to be of a superior nature? And God's answer is because he is. But then there's what Sam is mentioning is there's this mention about the Isha Kushit. What's that all about? And so the simple read of it is that Isha Kushit is some other wife. Yes, in Midrash, that Tzipora is Kushit. Right, but the simple read of it is there's some other wife. The famous Midrash about Moshe going down to Cush and becoming a general there and marrying a princess there. Famous development in some of the actually apocryphal literature that we have about where Moshe was for that whole time between when he killed the Egyptian and when he shows up at the Be'er. But did he marry a Cushite? But why is Mary upset about him marrying a Cushite? What's it her business if he wants to marry a second wife? Not a big deal. So it could be that she realizes that if Moshe has upset Zipporah by taking another wife, then maybe somebody else is going to be upset. And think about it. What does Hashem answer? Hashem answers, Moshe sees me face to face. Now, how's that an answer to this particular problem? So now let's take a look at what's going on in the family. I'm going to posit the following and walk straight through the story. There is a Kohen Midian. His job is as a religious official, Kohen Midian, and his name is Reuel. He's got 7 daughters. We don't know the names of any of the other daughters except Zipporah, oldest or not, Zipporah. He either has no sons or else whatever sons he has are too young at this point, and that's why the girls are out there shepherding the flock. Moshe marries Zipporah and stays in the vicinity, and then Reuel dies. How do I know Reuel dies? Reuel doesn't appear anymore. After he marries Zipporah, he's gone. I'm not saying he had a heart attack at the wedding. I just mean, at some point, he's gone. And then who is Moshe shepherding for? Yitro. Who's Yitro? Kohen Midian. In other words, Yitro is evidently the oldest boy who took over. He now owns the flock, but he can't shepherd because he's Kohen Midian. He's running the whole Shevet, and he's a religious official, and therefore he can't be the one. So Moshe works for his brother-in-law, shepherding the flock.
What about the other brothers?
No, we're going to get there. There is one other brother. When we come to Har Sinai, what does Yitro do? Yitro, Zipporah's brother, brings Zipporah and the kids to meet Moshe. Moshe's been busy taking Am Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and splitting the sea, etc. And Yitro brings Zipporah and the two kids to meet Moshe. They have a detente. This is Kohen Midian. So there's a whole religious gathering that happens. And what happens at the end? Moshe sends him back. It's not even possible to consider, Yitro, will you please come with us? First of all, there'd be no purpose in him coming with us. He's a Kohen Midian. Second of all, he can't abandon his people. He's in charge of his people. That's not on the table. What is on the table? There's another brother. This brother is not the oldest brother, or for some reason is not the one selected to be Kohen Midian. If he's not selected to be Kohen Midian, there's two things about him that are valuable. One is, he can afford to leave. And the second thing is, as a desert person, he has particular knowledge of the desert. And therefore, what does Moshe say to him? Please come with us and be our eyes. And Chovav doesn't say, I've got to run the people, I'm a Kohen, I can't leave. He just says, I want to go back to my people. And Moshe says, please, we need you to guide us in the desert, and we'll share the goodness with you. In the end, Chovav agrees. Haraya, they show up in Israel. They're there. So what was Miriam's problem? Miriam was complaining, if Moshe took another wife, he's going to tick off Tzipora's family. If he's going to tick off Tzipora's family, here we are in the desert, about to head into Midbar Paran without a scout. Chovav's not going to want to come with us. He's going to abandon us. What does Hashem say back to Miriam? Moshe sees me face to face. You think he needs eyes in the desert? And in the end, Chovav does join them and stays with them all the way through and then actually helps us conquer the land. But
how do we know he stays with them?
Because his descendants end up in the middle of the land and in Shoftim Aleph, there are battlers with us on behalf of, with Yehuda and Shimon to help conquer the land.
As an aside.
So what we see here is that even though the Midrash, for its own purposes, wanted to align not only Chovav and Reuel and Yitro, Yeter is easy, Yeter and Yitro is just variations, but also Keni and Putiel and several other names that show up in other places all being the same person, it may be that the Midrash is attempting to sort of solidify the image of the Midyani and to one single character, but the simple pshat in the text, what we have to do is to pull away the Midrashim that we started with and just read the text as is, you'll see there are three distinct characters. There's Reuel, who is the head of the family when we first meet him, but then he disappears off the scene, and everybody else afterwards is Ben Reuel, or Bat Reuel. There's Tzipora, who's Moshe's wife. There's Yitro, who is the son who becomes Kohen Midian, and can be have a religious detente. The meeting, by the way, with Moshe should remind us a little bit about Malki Tzedek and Avram, that scene of the Kohen, who's the head of the local nation, coming and greeting and meeting with us. But then there's no question, he goes back and he runs his people. And then there's Chovav, who as the younger brother, can indeed join the people and chooses to do so and stays as this sort of separate but, member of the clan. So hopefully we have a better understanding both of the Parsha in Parshat Yitro and also in Parshat Shmot when we first meet him, and also of that interesting meeting that we have in our Parsha.